Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Get a Job. I'm your host, Kathleen Brady, and I am a career life management coach with 25 years of experience helping people identify and achieve their career life goals. Those of you who have listened to our show before, you know that the purpose of our show is to help job seekers navigate the chaos and confusion of looking for a job, no matter what stage you're at in your career. It could be just starting looking for your first job, at a mid-career change, doesn't matter. We are here to help you. The show is based on a book, my most recent book, called Get a Job, 10 Steps to Career Success. That's available on Amazon. And what we try to do in the book is offer you a paradigm, so give you a sense of how to take you through the job search process in a systematic way. And so we're using the show to supplement the book and kind of walk you through step by step and inviting guests to help fill in some of the gaps, answer some of the specific questions that you might have, and just take away some of the isolation sometimes of looking for a job. It can be very off-putting for people because you're sort of at home doing it by yourself, and just to have that feedback and a sense of community can be really helpful. So we are here to answer your questions, and so throughout the night, whenever you have a call or a question, please dial in. Our number is 646-716-9397. We have a great guest tonight and a great show lined up for you, and I'm sure you're going to have lots of questions. Just want to remind you that if at any point you've missed any of the shows and you want to go back and listen to them, the archives of the past shows can be found on iTunes. So you can download them. They're all for free. Just go to iTunes, the Apple Store, and search by Life Coach Radio Network. It's all one word, Life Coach Radio Network. You will find not only this show, Get a Job, but a whole bunch of other shows that could really be helpful to you in your career life planning. So just a wealth of information there for you. So as you know, in our last show, we started talking about technology. And technology has really revolutionized the job search process. It's made it incredibly easy for those who know how to use it and incredibly frustrating for those who do not. So in our last show, we talked specifically about online application systems and how employers use these systems, kind of from trying to get inside the employer head a little bit, think about and explore those annoying screening questions and sort of what are some of the best practices to be able to answer some of those so that your resume doesn't go into the great big black hole and you're able to avoid some of the frustration that comes along with technology. And tonight we're going to go a little bit further and talk a bit more specifically about how to use technology to find that hidden job market. And I'm pleased to welcome Sarah Stambouli of Stambouli Consulting. She is a coach with an expertise in helping executives conduct a more efficient and effective job search by better accessing that hidden job market. She is incredibly busy, and we are so delighted that she was able to take time away from her clients for this next hour to really share her vision and her advice on how to research the hidden job market and connect to employers and build an effective online presence. So welcome, Sarah. I'm so excited that you're here with us tonight.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Now, Sarah and I met a number of years ago when social media was just starting to kick in. And one of the reasons I asked Sarah to be on the show was because at the time she was, in my mind, the leading expert. She knew all about this stuff in a way that I just did not. I like to think I'm a little bit up to speed now on most of it, but I figured you had such a jump start on it. You are the expert. So there's really two things that we want to focus on specifically tonight is, you know, one is how do you create your profile and your online presence, but clearly more importantly, what people want to know is how do you use that so that you can get those meetings. So let's start with how do you build your profile? What's the first thing people should do when they're thinking about using online social media?
Okay. Well, for those of you in job search, first of all, especially if you're finding it all a little overwhelming, I can make one recommendation that will simplify things for you a little bit, which is that until you feel like you're utilizing LinkedIn well, I would just start with LinkedIn and just think about LinkedIn in terms of your online presence for those of you that are looking to get a job. For those of you with other goals like building your own business, then the first tool might be something different. But for most job seekers in the for-profit and non-for-profit world, I would say starting with LinkedIn is a safe way to go.
Right.
And to that regard, I would say that even before you start working on your profile, I always recommend that if you don't have any LinkedIn profile, I would just start with, you know, entering the basics, your jobs and your schools. And if you do, however, and you're already working and you're job hunting, I would recommend, and we can talk about this later, that you start with adjusting your privacy settings before you start working on your profile. But if you're not job hunting, that's not quite as important, the order that you do that in.
Okay. Well, let's focus, because I think most of the people listening to the show are probably in that job-seeking category. So tell us a little bit about the privacy settings. Why is it, especially if they have a job, you know,
okay.
if they've already got a job and they're looking while they while they're employed, how
Absolutely.
Important is that?
So first of all, if you feel like sometimes you're having trouble finding things on LinkedIn, you're not going crazy. They move things a lot. So sometimes, you know I'm allegedly an expert, and I get on and sometimes I can't find things because they've moved it. But right now, one of the first things I would encourage everyone to do is to log into LinkedIn and figure out what your password was. And under there's a tiny picture of you on the right. And under that, the second to the bottom thing is something called privacy and settings, and there's an option to review it. And so I often have my clients start there and log in there, and we fix them first before they start working on things. And here I'm actually doing it right now to make sure. It's under in the middle under privacy controls, and there's two things that I feel like are not controversial that everybody should change, and they are the first one is turning on and off your activity broadcasts, and the default is that it's checked, but I would uncheck it. And what that does is, you know those annoying emails that say, Sarah Stambouli updated her, you know, this, that, and the other thing on LinkedIn. Sarah changed her picture. Sarah changed her picture again. Sarah is so vain, she's changed her picture yet again. If you don't want to be sending those out, then you want to uncheck that. And if you're job hunting, you definitely don't want to look like you're spending your life on LinkedIn, because it could be a, you know, hint out that you're job hunting. But regardless, it's not the – there may be things you want to communicate with your network, but the fact that you change a word on your LinkedIn is probably not the first thing you want everyone to know. So the first one, uncheck. The second one is a similar idea. Select who can see your activity feed. It's kind of the same dumb, boring thing. The default is your connections, and I would change that to only you. And so those first two you want to change to minimize them. The third one is a little bit debatable what the best setting is, and that is what others see when you viewed your profile. So what people don't realize is that if you look at people's profiles on LinkedIn, depending on your settings and their settings, they may know that you've looked at their profile. Now, that may be good in certain settings. They may then contact you, I suppose. But for many people, when you're working on your profile, you want to be looking at your peers and your friends and your enemies and some person you think is just really good looking. And you want to be free to look around on LinkedIn without people knowing that you're doing that, just so you have privacy. And so I encourage people, unless they have a reason otherwise, to make themselves totally anonymous, which is not the default. There's a recommended setting that you make it clear you've been looking at people's profiles. Now, The fourth one is who can see your connections. I would not change that. I think it's important that you let your connections see your connections because that's the purpose of LinkedIn. And then I would encourage you to make your photo and your profile public and make it, write it in such a way that you're okay with that. And then the last box, I won't get into that, not too important. So those are my recommendations, and I usually work with clients. We take a glance at this first before we start working on their LinkedIn.
And I have to say, one of the things I know is because I'm looking at it as well while you're talking people through it, you can't do this from the LinkedIn app on an iPad.
Okay. That may well be. I would definitely advise that people don't work on stuff this important on an iPad. I personally am a big fan when you're job hunting of getting a ginormous monitor, in fact, bigger than even a laptop, much bigger than a laptop monitor, for working on your letters and everything to do with job search, because you're much less likely to make mistakes when everything is big. And it's a lot more pleasant to navigate the internet when it's gigantic and you're not squinting and you can have two things next to each other. You know, you can look at your resume on one side and LinkedIn on the other.
And I think that's such an important point, because I think people try to do some of these things. You know, we're such a world of multitasking, and they're trying to respond to emails and send cover letters through their iPhones, and I think you're right. That's got to be something you don't do on the go. It's something you really ought to focus on.
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely not. I don't even like people using Gmail because the Gmail window is small and you can't see your whole letter. I'd rather people be using their Gmail, if they have it, or whatever they're using, within Outlook or another email client where the whole screen, you can see the whole letter. And I also advise people only use a program, which Gmail does not have, that has an automatic spell check so that it happens automatically and you can't send it without dealing with what they perceive as your misspellings, as opposed to having to set it each time.
Now, it's interesting. I mean, all of these privacy settings, I think I love that, you know, sort of don't let everybody see all that activity. Every time you brush your teeth, it appears on your link. And I think, you know, certainly if you are currently working while you're looking for a job, how important do you think it is if somebody is unemployed? Do you think that matters?
Well, it's not as important, but it's kind of boring, right? So if you're going to be sending out something to your entire network, do you want it to be that you updated your education by adding the location of your college? Or would you rather it be that if you want to communicate with the world, I'd rather you send out an interesting article, post something interesting on LinkedIn, or, take an actual action, you know?
So just to be clear for the listeners, the activity broadcast is not the same thing as a status update.
Right. It looks like that's what you're talking about with the second one, but they're both stupid things that you don't want. The only time you might want to turn on one or two is right after you get your new job and you're going to change it. You might want that announcement coming out. But again, you could just announce it. You could just send a link, you know, saying, hi, just joined a new company. And they'll probably send something like that out anyway.
And it's interesting. I think that's the better way to do it because, again, you're controlling the story.
Mm-hmm.
You get to and sort of say it the way that you want. The interesting one to me is whether others can see when you've viewed their profiles. I have two minds of that. On the one hand, I like to be able to sort of slink around and not have people know when I'm looking at them. On the other hand, if I'm job hunting, maybe it's okay if the employer sees.
Absolutely, if you're only looking at employers, but you're not always. Sometimes you're looking at your competition and trying to find another way to word things, and you're like looking for ideas on how to copying your ex-enemy's profile because they have the same job as you and you're looking for a different way to phrase something. And so it's not always because you want to work at their company that you're looking at them. And
okay.
So that's why.
So I mean, clearly LinkedIn is, you have to have a LinkedIn profile if you're job hunting.
If you want to utilize the hidden job market, you don't have to. People get jobs without one, absolutely. But, like, I don't think I would want to work with a client that didn't have one because they'd be kind of tying their hands behind their back. And I would feel like it would wind up being a very expensive engagement with me because it's going to be take forever.
Right.
And they're going to see far fewer options. It's such a powerful tool. It just seems silly not to use it to me. When you know how to use it well, a lot of people don't know how to use it well, so it doesn't seem like such a powerful tool.
Right. And there are some people who I've noticed, too, particularly if they were sort of playing and experimenting in the beginning, their name comes up. They've got three or four different profiles, and they don't know which one they are. So it really
And that, I don't think, oh, that's a great point. That is not... Well, that could be why, that they're experimenting or playing, but I don't think that's usually the reason why people have more than one profile. There's a really easy way to accidentally create another profile, and that brings me to a great settings point, which is that absolutely add every single email address you've ever had to your LinkedIn account. They won't show every address that you have access to. Because you do need to confirm it. They'll send an email and you'll have to confirm that you got that email. But if you stop working at a company, do not remove the email address. Leave it there. No mail will get sent to it. Mail will only get sent to the address you choose. But the reason for that is a lot of people upload their contacts into LinkedIn and then they send out an invitation to link to everybody from their contacts. And so if you get an email saying link to me on LinkedIn, and it goes to an email address that isn't associated with your LinkedIn account, and you say, okay, what you don't realize is it's possible to create a second LinkedIn account that has, you know, no information and only one or two friends that way.
And what do they do if they've done that?
It's a little easier now to do it. There's different situations and different tools you can use, but I would just go to the help because they change it all the time. I think now you might even be able to merge them. You didn't used to be able to. But it's very important that you get rid of the other accounts and only have the one because it just, amongst people that use LinkedIn a lot, it just makes you look not as with it. To have that mistake going and to have not have noticed it. Now, on certain fields, that would be less of a liability than others, but it's never ideal.
Okay, great. So is there anything else we should know about the privacy settings or the settings before we start talking about what the content?
No, I think that's good. Yeah, I think that's good. That's enough.
Great. All right, good. We're talking with Sarah Stamboli of Stamboli. Am I pronouncing your name correctly,
Sarah?
Great. Very good. If you've got questions about LinkedIn and social media, please call us at 646-716-9397. All right, let's get into it. Let's talk about the profile. What's your best advice on how to build a profile?
Okay. Well, I mean, the easy thing is to at least start with your job titles and companies for the last, say, 10 years, depending on how old you are, if you have 10 years of work history, and put in your schools, your education. If you went to a great university or great grad school and then you took a little course here or there, I might not enter that in the education field because it will show up first. And if you went to Harvard Business School, you might not want the little, you know, social media course you took to be the thing everyone sees instead of the Harvard Business School. So I really just think a lot about the way the whole thing looks. Like, really look at it from your first impression and think about what's showing and what isn't. And you have the opportunity to reorder some of the sections as well and put them in different order. And I would look at it on a small screen and see what you see, and then look at it on a big screen and see what you see, so that you know, and just kind of see, like, what springs to mind here. And to make sure you're not crowding, you don't have to fill out everything they tell you to either. So I'd really think about what are your strongest points and make sure that they're not too buried, that they're on top.
And I think the mistake a lot of people make when they do the LinkedIn profile is they think it has to be exactly like their resume. And it's the elements of the resume, but you're right, it's what shows up first and how does it appear.
A little bit more flexibility. So a job application that they make you sign that you've included every little thing you ever did is going to have everything. And a resume usually has a bit more. And LinkedIn, you can leave stuff out. It's not considered a lie if you leave things out. And you can simplify things a bit. The most important thing to know on LinkedIn is what you call your headline. And your headline is the phrase right under your name. And that is the thing that people see when they do a search. And that is what they look at when they decide whether or not to click on you and look further. So that's very important real estate. So you want to think about what that says. If you have a job, you always want to include the company there. You want to say that you're the controller at Google, not just say controller, especially if it's a company that people will recognize. But even if it isn't, it's generally a good thing to make it clear you're employed in that is always a good move. And make sure that your job title be something that is a little bit representative of what you want to do next and be representative of what you are. So it doesn't have to be your exact job title in the headline. It can be a little bit different. So if you have some weird title at your company, but what you really are is the controller, then you can just write controller. And there's different phrases. So I definitely look around at what your options are and make sure that that be exactly what people you want people to see under your name.
And I think it's important for people to understand that headline, it's not like a dating headline. You don't want to be cutesy in this. And you certainly don't out there, you know, unemployed attorney seeking job. And I've seen people try to do that kind of thing. And that again, it's the headline. That's how people are viewing you. And you want to do something that sort of spins your story in a more positive light.
Right. So you'd want to say international arbitrage, you know, expert or, you know, whatever it is that you are, you know. And it can be what you are or what you want to be. So if you're not working this second as an attorney, but you plan to be working as an attorney, then you can put that there. And if there's anything that makes it more interesting or applicable, like you could put attorney or you could put, you know, international patent attorney or something that makes it clearer,
right,
is just going to get people's attention a bit more. And then you want, there's a lot of sections, so there's different ways that you can go about it. For most people, it makes sense to use a section called the summary section.
Okay.
And people use that a lot of different ways, and everyone has an opinion. My opinion is that you use it as a summary and think of it as what you would want someone to say behind your back to your desired employer. So if you'd like nothing more than to work for the head of digital marketing at Macy's, okay, then you'd want to put what the head of digital marketing at Macy's, a description that would be attractive to them and someone they wanted to hire. So you talk about your digital marketing experience, your retail experience, your clothing experience, your omnichannel experience, et cetera. And you'd want to make that clear. And if you hadn't recently been working in a job like that, you'd want to be using that summary to sort of reposition yourself as a candidate for a job like that. So they can be quite tricky to write if you're looking to make a change, because you want to be sort of doing a hybrid of what you've done, you know, what you've done and what you want to be.
Right. It's interesting with the summaries. There's no sort of rule of thumb about how long they should be, or it depends on what story it is you have to tell, right?
Absolutely. Now, there's certain customs, and customs are a little different. So if you are in marketing or human resources or kind of any kind of digital role, it's normal to write a bit more on LinkedIn and have a bit more complete profile. If you're an attorney or you work at a hedge fund or you work in non-retail real estate for whatever reason, those are areas where people tend to be a lot sparer in their profiles. And while you certainly, I might encourage you to write a little more than average, you might not want to have every bell and whistle going and having a thousand different, you know, sections. So you might want to do a little more than average and a little better than average, but maybe not as much detail. Whereas if you're, you know, showcasing your digital marketing skills as part of your job, then you might want to have quite a bit more sections and more bling on it, kind of.
So what do you do in the situation where you want to explore a couple of different paths? So, you know, when you're doing a letter, you might be focusing on one aspect, and so you have two different versions of your resume. But if they go to LinkedIn, do you just leave it somewhat more generic?
Well, that's what most people advise. There is a crazy feature that's almost impossible to utilize. There is actually a way to have different people see different things on LinkedIn, depending how they come in, whether they come in as a friend or colleague in those categories. And I have not even ever suggested anyone attempt to master that. And one of the reasons is that you'd have to move the categories everybody's in because they all just say whatever is convenient. They say they're a friend when they're not, you know. categories in which people come in are not necessarily really true. There's other reasons why they pick them. So that, I'm just saying it's there because I think it's kind of awesome, but it's not really practical to use it. But you could play around with it if you had nothing else to do and then tell me about it. In general, I don't generally advise people go after two very different targets at the same time. What I suggest is that people pick one, go all out for it for X period of time, and if they're not feeling the love from the target, that they consider changing it. And people say to me, but I can't be going from being an accountant one day and a HR person the next. And the fact is you can, because if you're not sending announcements out to everybody, people are not looking at your profile unless they have a reason to. Like, everyone isn't looking at you unless you're contacting them. And the people you're contacting to be an accountant are different people than you're contacting to be an HR person. And you'd be shocked at how few people would ever notice that you change your spots quite a bit if you've got your profile settings changed. So in general, I think it's better to go all out for one thing and declare yourself and be a bit more specific. It's a lot more attractive, especially if it's something that is a little bit of a long shot. To not be hedging and showing huge enthusiasm for that one thing is going to be make you a more attractive candidate.
Right.
That being said, a lot of people just, that makes them too anxious, and they'd rather be vaguer. And then that's your option.
Right. And it's interesting. I always say to people, there's no one right size fits all. One size fits all to this. So some people are a little bit more comfortable being a little bit more generic so that they can kind of cast a wider net. But then the challenge is you don't come across as enthusiastic and passionate about any one thing. So
right.
You know,
and I genuinely tell everyone, sometimes people don't believe me right away, the wider your net, the longer your job search. And that a smaller pond, it's kind of counterintuitive, but the smaller the pond, the better a search you can do, and generally the quicker people will get a job. And even though it's very counterintuitive, but that's a longer discussion to explain exactly why that is.
Right. Well, there's some very basic things that I sort of know the answer to, but I really just want to make sure we kind of get it out there for folks. Things like pictures. You know, one of the things that makes me crazy when I look at people's LinkedIn profiles is the goofy pictures they put on there, particularly if they're job. It really ought to be a professional picture, not you in a bikini.
Absolutely. You in a bikini is never a good move. The other thing is, I think that some of the reasons the pictures look so goofy is people haven't quite registered that the pictures are much bigger than they used to be. So a weird picture used to be less of a big deal, and now it's a really big, weird picture. A couple of things that I advise that I think are very less obvious things is I'm not, depending on what your role is, whether you have a suit on or you have business casual, it's really, again, the overall impression of the picture. So if you are a very serious, professional-looking person with a very serious face and you have a golf shirt on, that might still look plenty professional, whereas someone else who kind of has a, you know, kind of a young smile on their face all the time might want to look more professional. And it's kind of, it's not like one rule necessarily. It's the overall impression. And I would say, and also a little bit your industry. But a
and,
couple
you know,
of things. Go ahead.
It's always about your professional brand. What is the impression this is leaving on other people? And that's, you've
yes.
got to ask yourself when you're looking at this stuff.
Yep. And again, I've seen people that are dressed more casually that still look like very serious people and the other way around. So two things that are good to think about, especially if you're not naturally photogenic, is I recommend that it doesn't mean that your face has to be straight to the camera, but you have to be looking into the camera very warmly. I recommend a pretty big smile, that we're not running for president or pope or rabbi, and that a lot of the people looking at this are going to be friends of friends that you're going to be asked to meet with you. And you want to look like, you don't want to look so serious that people think that having an exploratory meeting with you is going to be a chore. You want to look like someone somebody might want to have a beer with, yet professional. So you just want to look friendly.
Engaging.
Yeah.
Engaging. Yeah.
And if you're looking at the camera, you're going to look warmer. And another tip is generally, for some reason, people always like to squat down when they're taking a picture. And most everybody looks better when the camera's at their face level or even a little above. But then wherever the camera is, be looking at the lens and smiling like it's your favorite puppy.
Now, one of the things people ask me about all the time, and I've got mixed emotions, I'd love to hear your thoughts, about how important endorsements and recommendations are.
I think the endorsements have lost a lot of value because they're so, everyone who's on LinkedIn knows how ridiculous they are. I'm constantly, now I'm in the stage where I'm getting endorsed for two things I don't do, and about 300 people have endorsed me for things I don't do because someone did, and now it's telling everyone to, and I'm not putting them on my profile. It's making me crazy.
Right.
And people think they're doing me some favor, and I don't do those things.
And the endorsement seems sort of pointless because it's very easy. You just get all these things up there, and people just click. So
people have never met me or endorsing me for things. They don't even know who I am. It's ridiculous. Now, unfortunately, it's sort of taken the place of the recommendations, which I thought was a very powerful thing. And the reason they were more powerful is that they had a name attached to them. So it's one thing for somebody to have a quote on your webpage about how great you are, but if someone specific is recommending you and they have their name and you can look and see who they are, I think that's very powerful. Now, oftentimes it suggests that if someone recommends you that you recommend them back, that is rarely appropriate. So the only people that should be recommending you are clients and bosses. So people who work for you, that's or vendors that you pay, anyone who depends on you for a living should not be recommending you. It's not very powerful.
Right.
So a client or a boss or someone else very senior who's writing something very specific, that can be a good thing. If you're an entrepreneur, I think it's very important. If you work in a traditional job, like you're a lawyer, investment banker, it's not common to have them, and I wouldn't worry about them. But if you had a really great one, it certainly would be great. But it's not normal or typical to have them, so I wouldn't worry about whether you have them. And I feel like having too many, especially if they're not clients or bosses, doesn't give the right impression either. So.
Right. Always, again, it gets back to look at it. What is it saying about you? And what's the message that you're trying to put out there? Listen, I want to make sure that we leave enough time to talk about how you use all of this to get to meetings. So we're assuming we've got the profile. We've got our settings done properly. Before we move on to getting meetings, I want to talk a little bit about the best practices for linking to others. And the question people ask me all the time is, should they pay for the premium service? And I sort of asked all of those together because I think they're all sort of tied into how you get the meetings. So,
okay. Well, I love the order because the one time people, again, people aren't looking at your LinkedIn profile all the time. The only time people are looking at it in general are when you link to them. So you always want to get it at least decent. You can always keep making it better, but you want to get it at least decent before you link to everybody. And if you're going to put up a picture, and if you can get a decent picture, I would. If you're really unphotogenic and you cannot get a decent picture, then I might not. But I do that all first because the only time they're going to link at you is when you link to them. And that's why a summary that makes it clear what your goals are, at least subtly makes it clear what your goals are, is good because people might look and they might be interested to see that now you've moved into a new field or it appears that you're looking for something in a new field, et cetera. And they'll get that 1 second of accurate information. I would link, I do recommend that people upload their contacts into LinkedIn, and there's a way to upload your Outlook contacts, your Mac contacts, your Gmail contacts. I would recommend you do this very carefully, not on a laptop, not when you're distracted. And what it does is it will run all your, it will not email everyone, but it makes it very easy to email everyone by mistake, so I'd do this very slowly. And you upload all your contacts, and it will tell you of all the, and it just looks at the email addresses, and it will tell you everyone who's on LinkedIn, at least registered with that email address, and that you're not linked to already. And that can really speed things up a bit. Now, the downside is that they have everybody checked, and so it's very easy if you don't uncheck the, select all is checked, to accidentally invite everyone you've ever met, including your bank manager and your ex-husband, to link to you on LinkedIn. And you definitely don't want to do that. So it's a little dangerous, but it's also very efficient. And what I recommend that people do is they go through, they ignore everyone who's not already on LinkedIn because it's not your job to advocate that they be on LinkedIn. It's annoying to get those emails. And don't assume they're not. They just may be under with a different email address. And go through, and the first pass, what I would do, is everybody who definitely knows who you are, where you like each other or you don't hate each other, they definitely know who you are, and they're not in a position where they're going to be super, super key to your job search, or they're not a lot more senior to you. So everyone who's just kind of a friend, an ordinary colleague, they definitely know who you are. It is possible if you're just starting out to send a mass email to everyone in that category only if you need to. What you can do is personalize the email that will go out to everybody and make it sound a little more like you. You know, don't sign your last name. Make it a little more casual. Hi, thought it was, you know, love to link in with you. Hope you're having a great July. Sarah, you know, so it seems a bit more personalized. And then you can send a bunch out at once. Anybody who might not remember who you are but would with a little memory jog that, but and you might want to link to them because they're kind of key to your industry, I would search for individually and send a genuine personal email reminding them how you know them. And anybody who's sort of, you know, potential boss or senior in your industry, anybody you want to be extra respectful of, I would send a more personalized email as well. Not an email, a LinkedIn invitation, a little bit more carefully written just to them. And I would send those out that way. And then once that round is done, if you click home, they have a suggestions. And most people just look at it, but if you don't know them, just X them out, and they'll keep giving you more suggestions. And oftentimes that, well, they'll be good suggestions. It will be people you want to link to. And it'll help you just get through that stage more quickly. And if you do know the people, there's a lot of benefit to being linked to a lot of people that you know, as long as you do know them. Not necessarily you always need to know them, but, you know, if you do know them and you don't hate each other, link. Don't be too picky or too snobby about their level or whether they're in your industry. That's my opinion.
Right. And I agree. The more people, it's interesting. My first level connects, I always say I want them to be people who I know well enough that I could pick up the phone or shoot them an email and they'll say, oh, yeah, I know who she is. I think mm-hmm. one of the people link to everybody that they don't really know and they've done nothing to foster and build that relationship. And I think you've got to be mindful of that when you're linking to people. Do you agree with that?
I do. I'm in a personally a bit of an odd situation in that because I worked at Columbia Business School and because of what I do for a living, a lot of people who have heard me speak or know me from my old role have linked to me. And I have found that when people have linked to me, they've asked to link to me, and then I later ask a favor of them, I'm shocked at how often they will do the favor, which is usually to me with a client. And so if people don't do the favor and they ask to link to me, then I don't really know them, then I unlink to them faster than I'm shocked at how often people will do a favor of asking to link to me that I don't know. But I only agree if I have reason to believe that they've heard me speak at something or we have an alma mater in common, or occasionally if they're just like super high up and fancy and I think they could help a client, sometimes I'll just say yes just because of that, to be honest.
Because I've written back to people and say, how do we know each other?
Cause I do that all the time as well. That's always a great move. And if someone's quite senior in your industry, more senior than you, you might just say yes because of that. But if they're just some random person, especially random people in another country who just seem weird and they don't have a lot of connections, you know, you can say ignore. You can ask them how they know you. The other thing is, if you make a mistake, the world doesn't come to the end. You can just unlink to people. They don't get sent a notice. So if you change your mind and you're like, I don't know who all these people are, you can just unlink to them later as well.
Right. Oh, that's great. Now, how would you unlink to somebody? You just click, I don't even know how to do that.
Well, they move it. I would just use their help, to be honest. I can't. I could tell you where it is, but it's going to move tomorrow. So just...
Okay.
Their help is amazing, and you really need it because they're always moving things.
So how to
unlink to people. It's very satisfying, too, if you're in a bad mood, just unlink to people you don't know.
That's great. All right, so now we're linked to people, and we've got the good profile. How do we get these meetings?
Oh, and the last thing I would say, I just want to say one more thing about linking. If you don't know a lot of people in your industry or you're just very shy and you feel uncomfortable linking to people and you wind up with this lame amount of contacts even though you vaguely tried, another thing you can do is join groups in your industry. Now, it's not that helpful because you can only see them. You can't see their contacts. So if you know anyone in the group, you want to actually link to them. But it's better than nothing, like if you're in a new location or something like that and you can't see their full name. There's a lot of reasons why it's not that great, but if you're really at a loss, it can be better than nothing. And if you get active in the group, some of the groups are more active than others, and you actually start talking to people in the group, that can be helpful as well. I just want to throw that in there as another option.
Right. And you start to see who's posting all the time, and it's good to sort of follow them and see what the tone
Absolutely.
Of the group is.
Absolutely.
Right.
So now you've got your network. So what's a big enough network, people sometimes ask me? If somebody's quite extroverted and they actually know a lot of people, and they're a little – it also depends how old you are. I mean, you're just going to know more professionals if you're 45 or 65 than 25, right? So if you're 45 and you're a pretty sociable person that knows a lot of people and you've really tried to link to everybody, you know, most people can get over 200 and they really know the people. If you're quite young or quite shy, you know, if you're quite shy, you know, you still want to be able to get over 100 if you're not – you know, 22. And if you are 22, you might say, like, who the heck am I going to link to? So you basically start with your friends, your parents' friends, and your friends' parents, you know, like if you're, like, still in college or something, you know? And then you kind of move on from there, and, you know, you'll find people to link to. So, you know, so there's kind of, like, what's enough is I feel like everybody, if you don't have 100, it's going to get tough, unless you're, like I said, like 21, then, you know, it might just take a little time till all your friends get on LinkedIn, but they will.
And it's not the quantity, it's the quality of the relationship.
I don't, it's a little bit the quantity, in terms of, like, the quality is, yeah, but if you don't have any quantity, it's going to limit who you can see. So if you don't have any quantity, you're going to have to pay. Because you can see more profiles. So if your quantity is really low, then you're going to need to pay to be able to see very much. And if you're only going to pay during your search and only going to be looking 6 months, it's not the investment of the century. You know, you can pay by the month and then turn it off. If you've got a really big network, there's less of a need to upgrade because you can see more profiles.
So is that
you shouldn't just link to everybody for no good reason either.
Is that the only benefit to paying for the service, is so that you could see profiles that, of people that you're not connected to?
Well, that's one benefit. It depends. There's different ways you can upgrade. You can get more in-mail. I'm not a big fan of in-mail. Is this way to message people that you don't know their email address. If you're directly linked to people, unless they hit it, you can generally see their email address. And I recommend that you contact them by emailing. But they have this thing called in-mailing within LinkedIn, which they make a big deal about, but I don't think is certainly better than nothing, but it's not the way I would advise people communicate if they don't have to. The other thing you get when you pay a premium, you get more search results. There's a lot of little benefits, and they are helpful. It just makes it a little bit easier to find people at the companies you want or organizations you want to work at. And so that's the big benefit of LinkedIn when you're job hunting, your first degree contacts are the people you know. Your second degree contacts are everyone they are linked to. And those are people that you can potentially get an introduction to or potentially reach out to using the other person's name. And that's the value of LinkedIn. Is finding a way. So let's say, Kathleen, you and I are linked, and you have a good network in the legal field compared to me, I would imagine. And so if we're linked, you know, I can talk to you and I can talk to everyone, but I already knew I knew you. But what I can do is find out everybody you know and find out if you know someone at a law firm, in the law department, at a company. And I can almost like look at your network without bothering you. I don't have to ask you, do you know this? Do you know that? Do you know that? I can see everyone that you know, at least as far as LinkedIn can tell me. And then I can pick my favor and not waste your time and say, you know, Kathleen, I see you know the head of litigation over at Pfizer. And, you know, as you know, I've been doing litigation at Novartis, and I'd really like to meet them. Would it be possible if I drafted some talking points for you to forward, I'll write it for you, but more or less write an email introduction to the head of litigation at Pfizer for me? It's a very specific favor. I'm not asking you to figure out what favor I need. I'm asking you. I'm doing the work for you. And I was able to do that all without bothering you until this point when I'm going to ask a very specific favor.
And that's the key. That's what you were saying earlier, too, about being focused as well, because you're doing all the work. You're putting the talking points together. You're asking me in terms of networking for something very specific. And I think when you... mistakes people make in networking, whether on LinkedIn or in person, is they just say, hi, do you know of any job openings or you know anybody I should talk to? It's a little bit too vague. Then I have to do all the work. You've done all the work, and all I have to do
Absolutely. And that's people think of networking. So let's say I want a job doing litigation at a pharmaceutical company. So I could start with my network and ask them all if they know anyone, or even look on LinkedIn to see who they know. Right? But
right.
I recommend a slightly different approach, which is you start with the target. Okay, what are all the pharma companies? What level within the litigation department at these pharma companies do I want to meet? Am I senior enough I want to meet the head of litigation? Would I be the head of litigation, so I want to meet someone above that? So who exactly, what title do I want to meet at all the pharma companies? And so I know the geography. So pharma companies within an hour of New York City, I want to meet the head of litigation. So at the beginning, it's just a theory. So I get a list of all those pharma companies and maybe biotech. And then I find out I want to meet the head of litigation. Then I find out who that is. And then I see who they are. And then I see, do I know anybody who knows them? So are they second degree to me through anybody? If they're second degree, that means someone I know knows them. And that's a great place to start.
Let me slow you down for a second. So it's easy enough to come up with, I mean, just through Google even, you know, give me the list of all the pharma companies in New York, New Jersey, and you'll get
mm-hmm.
those. Find the name of the person that you're looking for.
Well, in this case, it would probably be on the website because it's pretty senior. If it isn't, and I'm looking for someone, and also the head of litigation might not be as likely to be on LinkedIn, so it's not maybe the greatest example, but let's pretend they all are on LinkedIn. I would play around with keywords. So I would try putting litigation in the title. I would try putting it in as a keyword. I would try the industry of pharma. I'd try the industry of biotech. I'd look at the industries. Then I might think, well, what if they don't do that? What if they put law practice as the industry? Even though it's not really the industry, it's the function in this case. I would play around with that. I would search around all different ways to try and find these people on LinkedIn. If I couldn't find them on the website, I would Google to look for it as well.
One of the things I noticed on LinkedIn is you could type in the name of the company, and it'll give you a list of the employees. You can't always see, but you can get some information about them.
Well, you can get the ones that are in your network, and if you pay, you can get a little bit more. And so then I see, let's say I'm second degree to the head of litigation at Pfizer through two different people. So I'm connected through you, and I'm connected through my friend John Barnes. Well, maybe I just asked you a big favor. So I don't want to bother you. I want to go through John Barnes. And so I might decide, or maybe I know two people there in litigation at different levels. So I'd weigh, like, what level person do I want to talk to versus how well I know my connections. So it's a bit of an art, not a science, who you go through to decide how you want to get your information. And sometimes sometimes you're, like, not doing so well. It's not so easy. And you can't find anyone in litigation, and you just found a couple of people at Pfizer, and you've Googled, and you can't find out who's in the position. Maybe your first favor is just to ask somebody if they would just find out for you who's in the position you're interested in. Just give you the name and the email address, and you don't even want an introduction, you know?
Right.
So it might be a multi-step process, and sometimes you don't ask them for the introduction, but at least you got you the name, and you're going to think about another way because the person linking you is mad at you or is your ex-boss who just fired you. Or, you know, there's a reason you don't want to go through them, but you do see – the fact that they're second degree to you through that person allows you to see their name.
And I think that that's a very valid point, though. People sometimes think that they can only go to the person who's in a position to hire them. Sometimes the most valuable information you can get is from someone from another department who can give you some of the – they can sort of snoop around for you. They don't feel particularly threatened because you're not coming in to take their job away. But if they're friends, they can be helpful to you in getting you to the right person. And that – you know, so I always say to people, don't think you can only talk to the person with the power to hire. Sometimes the people who are lower on the totem pole have a whole lot more recon that they can do for you.
Sometimes, absolutely. Because it does take a lot of time to get people to talk to you, you know, depending on where they are, I might keep it, you know, minimize that favor until you're getting a little closer. You know, it depends. It just depends.
Well, it's all about figuring out how to do this strategically. And again,
mm-hmm.
I keep my favorite sentence of there is not a one size fits all. But it's about sort of here are some of the best practices. How do you use this information to fit it into your particular situation and make the best choice for
Absolutely.
Yourself?
And let's say I see that my friend Michael Schumann knows somebody I want to meet at Celgene. And while I'm at it, if I'm going to bother him, maybe I should find out everything I might want to ask him. So I might look at Michael Schulman a bit more and see if he's second degree, like if he's a connection to anyone else. And then I can, like, ask all my favors at once, or maybe I want to have a phone call with him and chat about all these people, figure out, I can't ask him maybe to introduce me to everybody, but I can pick my favor. So you might want to kind of look at it globally. Or maybe I see, wow, Michael Schulman is connected to everybody at this firm. Why? And then I look at his background, I see he used to work there. And then I'm thinking, like, wow, he knows everybody I want to meet. maybe I'm not going to just email him. Maybe I'm going to take him to lunch. Or maybe I'm going to find out a way to, like, you know, plan an event because I don't even know him that well with him and our mutual friend. Because I want to ask a lot of favors and it's a little too abrupt because I don't know him that well. And so I'm going to kind of work my way into this. There could be different ways to go.
So the key that I want people to realize, and you said it quickly, but that you can go in, I can go in and look at all the people you're connected to. So if I'm thinking, Stephanie's, I keep calling you Stephanie, Sarah's very connected. I know she knows a lot of people. Let me see exactly who she knows, and she might be able to help me meet some of these people. So you can actually kind of click through and see. I mean, it's very, again, even though it's technology, it's not instantaneous, so you still have to be willing to put in a little bit of that work to see and kind of make that list of, gee, there are six or seven people that she knows that I want to meet, you know, in a broad way. How am I going to approach her? What's the best, you know, do I know you well enough to shoot you an email? Do I, you know, pick up the phone, try and get an appointment? I mean, you really need to strategize and think about those things.
Absolutely. And when people want me to introduce them to people, it takes me an incredibly long time to write an introductory email that will actually get them the meeting. And these emails should not be about how great you are at all. They should be 100% about why you want to meet that person, why that company, why that person, why that department, why the position they're in. It should be all about the target, the person you want to meet in their company, and not at all about how great you are. They are not meeting with you because you're so great. They're meeting with you because you're a friend of their friend or a colleague of their colleague, and you've shown great interest and enthusiasm and appreciation for them and their role, and that's what's going to get you the meeting. Now, the downside of that is that's all about them, and so everyone is different. It takes a long time to write them. But the beauty is if you really do a very other-centered email about the person you want to meet, you're much more likely to get the meeting, and that work you put in that could take an hour to figure out why, all the things you can say about why you want to meet them, that prep that you do before you send the email will have you already much better prep for when you do get the meeting.
And the key is, and I think a lot of people think, oh, I don't have time to do all that, I'm better off just blasting and sending out 100 resumes and trying to get 100. You're much better off focusing and getting 3 to 5 quality meetings that are going to turn into something rather than just a busy work of kind of flooding the market with your resumes or with blanket emails.
Right? Absolutely. And, of course, you're not sending your resume in this case. You're really sending only a minimal amount of information about yourself. You're keeping the focus on them and your interest in them. It's much more appealing. And so in writing that email, if you may or may not be asking directly for an introduction. You might be just asking the person in the middle for their email address and permission to use their name. Or they might say, can you give me the email address and I won't use your name if they don't want you to. And you're still it's still the same content. So they're sending why you want to meet them or you're sending why you want to meet them. And it's much more effective. And if somebody sees how much homework you did, so let's say you're reaching out and the connecting person isn't someone you know that well or you haven't kept in touch, but you put a ton of work into, like, why you want to meet that person and you've been incredibly respectful of the person you're asking the favor of, and they see how much homework you did, they might be willing to help you anyway because they know you won't embarrass them with the mutual contact because look how much work you put into it and how specifically you chose this person you want to meet, and you're not flooding the market. You're being very targeted.
Sarah, I knew that this hour was going to fly by. There is probably 100 more things that we could talk about and really help people with. But I certainly appreciate your, as I said, taking time from your very busy schedule to share your insights with my audience. And just wondering if there's one last piece of advice that you want to share with folks, whether about LinkedIn or any other social media when it comes to job hunting.
I should probably be saying something very deep, but one thing we didn't mention is following companies on LinkedIn. I think that's a great thing to do. And while I think LinkedIn is everything, if you're in a field where people do use Twitter, in some fields they do a bit more. People think that to be on Twitter they need to be tweeting all the time. You don't. You can do a very basic little Twitter profile and just follow companies and people and use it as just a source of news about your industry and personnel changes in your industry. And occasionally you may find it is a great way to connect as one more resource to consider that does not apply to everybody. And it would only be after you've got everything going on LinkedIn. It could be another resource if you're having a tough time finding enough contacts in your area.
Well, I have to tell you, it sounds to me like we have to have you come back again and talk about Twitter, too. But the takeaway from this episode is really get your LinkedIn profile, because that's the place to start. And check those privacy settings, make sure that you've got everything the way you want, then build your profile, be mindful of the message that you're sending to people, everything from the picture to the word choice that you use to how it looks and is displayed, and then use it to reach out to people in terms of making really specific and targeted introductions to them or you know, making sure you're being strategic about what it is you want from people and how it is you approach them, and let people see that you've done your homework and you're putting in the effort. And I love the expression, I use it myself, be other focused, because it's all about them. Why
Absolutely.
Are they important with them? How do you see them helping you? It's your responsibility to let them know that, and that'll make them more open to helping you.
That's Absolutely.
Great. Sarah, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being on our show tonight, and I thank you very much for being here. And as I said, I think we'll have you come back at a later date, maybe talk about Twitter and maybe go a little bit more in-depth. You know, now we'll give people a chance to practice a little bit, and then we can kind of take them to the next level. I wanted to remind listeners, too, don't forget to listen to some of our upcoming shows. We have got tomorrow, we have at 8 o'clock, recovering from divorce. So that is something hopefully you don't need, but if you do, we've got a great coach that can give you some tips and advice on that. And then, of course, on Friday, we've got the noon life coach chat, which is a great episode. There's usually two or three coaches on there, can answer any questions, like an open mic thing, so they will be helpful. Always check out blogtalkradio.com/lifecoachradionetwork. Find out the other shows that are, we've got a show on every night coming up, so check out the listing there. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at KB Career Planners. That'll give you all the updates about upcoming shows, and you can access the archive shows. Again, Sarah, thank you so much for being with us tonight, and we're going to sign off, and thank you once again for joining us, everyone. Have a great evening.
Oh, good luck, everybody. It was great.
Great. Sarah, thank you so much. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Have a good night.